Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. When my first child was born, he was very sick, and it was then that I knew I had to have a business that I could operate from home. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive. Hi, it's Michael Senoff with HardToFindSeminars.com. Here's a 50-minute recording with Eric Briggs and a gentleman named Dale. Eric Briggs has worked personally with Art for almost 6 months. Dale had called me wanting to talk to Art, and Art was out of town, and I thought the next best thing was to get someone who's worked with Art to answer some questions for him. Dale was getting ready to go down to Florida to look at purchasing a multi-million dollar business, and in this 50-minute call, you'll hear Eric and Dale go over advice, tips, techniques on what to do while Dale is down there looking at this business. It gives you some insight into Art's teaching, but coming from a different perspective, coming from the student, and that's Eric. So I hope you find this helpful, this new perspective on the Art Hamill system. Enjoy.
Hello?
Hey, Eric. It's Mike Senoff out in San Diego.
Mike, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you? You know what I was going to call you about? I got another guy who wants to talk to Art, and I knew Art was out of town, and this guy's got a meeting tomorrow to go meet with a business owner, pretty promising situation, and since Art wasn't there, I was like, well, let me give Eric a call and see if Eric would be willing to talk to him, and based on the stuff you learned, just give him any advice. He goes, Mike, do you have any advice on what I should do tomorrow? Let me get him on right now. Hold on. Hey, Dale, this is Michael Senoff. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Listen, I've got Eric on the line. Now, Eric was a student of Art Hamill's, and the reason I called Eric, because Art was out of town, but Eric did tell me he just talked to Art, and he is out of town, or was out of town, but I figured since you've got a meeting tomorrow, I'd see if Eric could help you out and give you some advice based on what he's learned from Art. Would that be all right?
That'd be fine.
I'm going to let you guys talk, and you can explain to Eric what's going on, and he can give you his best advice. Would that be all right?
Yeah, this is good.
Okay, Dale. So, Eric, can you hear each other?
I'm fine. No problem at all.
Okay. Well, Dale, just tell Eric what the situation is and ask away.
Eric, I found this business, and I've spent a couple months here trying to find one that's suitable. I've been looking for a manufacturing business, but I ended up with kind of a distributorship of prosthetic devices, and it's so profitable that I couldn't turn it down. I had to take the next step. I'm just wondering if you could give me some insight into what I might be looking for or what you do when you first go to the business.
First of all, Dale, you were able to get financials. The basic financials, was it through a website that you found it, a broker?
How did it come about? Right. It was the Wall Street Journal.
Really? Okay. And you did a direct contact and got financials.
No, it's not a direct contact. It's through a broker. But this broker is probably the best broker I've seen. I've talked to probably 100 brokers. And I've never found one to do write up and present things the way this woman has done.
You found a good one.
Yeah, the majority of them are mediocre at best.
Exactly. Did you take the Art Hamill system?
Yeah.
Have you gone through it a few times? Yeah, sounds like it. See, that's the whole thing that I found. I was fortunate because I got three business financial packages from three different businesses. One was through a colleague for a chain of gyms. Didn't work out. One was for a mining company. They dealt with ore and things like that. Again, didn't work out. Financials didn't really tell the full story, the things that they presented. And then I find this company in Arizona, and it's a nutritional supplements business. This themselves a manufacturer, but they actually have a huge direct mail company. Well, what I did was I flew in, and I was able to convince the owner to meet with me, although I didn't have near enough financial strength to pull this thing off by myself. I said, listen, I'm working with a private equity group to be named later. I said, there are millions of dollars that these people have to invest in a good opportunity. The management needs to be in place, so they can't be both owners walking away. Can't be in one of situations where there's not some kind of management structure. And I said, my background goes hand in hand with your industry, the industry that I was in, kind of like a brother-sister thing. So I have an understanding of the business, and I really like to meet and talk about it. You know how it is, they always say principals only or no intermediaries or all that mess. I said, listen, if you want to sell this business, it'll get sold if the business that you're presenting is if it should be. If it's the way I spoke to them, I guess these people said, you know what, we're going to give it a shot. I had the mindset that I had this money in the bank, that I had the few million dollars that I needed, because it's a multi-million-dollar business like yours. Huge business. I just acted as if I had the money, that I was the gatekeeper to the money. And they asked me questions, almost like what you consider a job interview,
sure,
which is probably what you're going to run into, just because it would seem that even though we're talking about all cash purchases, the business owners, it seems like they still want to have some kind of say in their mind about who takes over their business. Although, at the end of the day, they don't care who you are as long as you have the money. But they have to make it seem as though they really care. This is like smoke and mirrors to me. So I met with them, and we've been back and forth, and I gave them a due diligence list of things that I needed to be able to put the financials together. Now, I didn't sign a letter of intent. This business owner did not want a letter of intent. He wanted a contract and a deposit to take the business off the market. You may run into that. I was able to negotiate a completely refundable earnest money.
How large?
You would not believe this. 10 grand for a multi-million dollar business to take it off the market. So that's cool.
What about how big a business are we talking about?
Well, let's put it this way. The sales are in the teens of millions per year.
Okay.
So it's not the 5 million per year. It's heading toward triple that now. Matter of fact, I would not be surprised if the business did between 13 and 15 million dollars this year. That's what it's projecting in sales, with a very high net. Because so much of the upfront expense has been taken care of, and a lot of it is not recurring expense, we're probably looking at a net between 20 and 22%. So very high net.
So, Eric, give him a step-by-step thing of what he should do when he goes down there. When you go down there, I guess the first thing you may want to do, I'm just thinking logically, you want to maybe just observe the business. That's why you're down there, right?
Right. I actually sat down there. They were having a meeting coming up, and I injected myself into that meeting. They were talking about some stuff in the office, and they were going to have some people come down, and I said, well, I want to be here for that meeting. And what they did was they put me into the meeting, and they flew in their whole team. It was just that time of year where they were doing that, and I was fortunate. They flew their whole team in, and they let me sit in the meeting and listen to things and pass me their internal handout, their internal documentation for the product launches and things like that. But when it came down for the truly confidential things, where maybe they were talking about certain suppliers, certain things that I could use to adversely impact the business, they asked me to leave. And I was cool with that, because at the time I felt like I had enough information with my background anyway, and some of the things that I do know, coupled with the information that they gave me, I knew that it looked good. I was going to, of course, do the due diligence, but I felt confident enough from there to say, okay, I can sign a contract knowing that my lawyer has got all the weasel clauses. I don't call them that in front of them.
Were you able to sit in on that meeting before you had your contract with the refundable deposit, or was that after?
Actually, that was a day or two after. It was within the week. But the thing was, I knew we were going back and forth, and I'd been getting pieces of information. I'd been getting facts, information here and there. So I felt good enough, especially with the way my lawyer, see, it's all in the way the lawyer does it. If you get a good lawyer that can write it up, almost like a real estate contract, you can tie up property all over the place and pretty much, as a buyer, be able to back out if your partner doesn't agree to it and your partner is a goldfish. You know what I mean? You don't have to actually have a partner. If you're your wife or a friend that decides, no, I don't want it, well, see, that's enough to kill the deal. So you just have to structure it to where you have these escape clauses. I just thought about the transaction like a big real estate transaction, because I've been a real estate investor in the past. So I kind of approach it that way. And then what happened from there, once I got there, I did this refundable deposit. It was put in an escrow account, which is very important. It was not written out to the business. It was written out to the escrow corporation, the third party, so they couldn't disperse the funds without certain conditions being met. So that was a protection. You do need a barracuda of a lawyer, and you do need a lawyer that will ride with you. I don't know if you've talked to a lawyer so far, but you need a lawyer that's going to say, hey, I've done this kind of stuff before, or I'm interested in riding with you because I can see the potential for a payout here. My lawyer said, listen, I know where you live. I'm a good lawyer. I know how to get money from people, so I'm not worried about it. This looks like something that could work, and I'll ride with you on it. And so he didn't charge me up front, because the Art Campbell talks about that, but that's not very easy to find. My Arizona attorney that I'm talking to right now, we're talking about a greatly reduced retainer, because I needed an Arizona attorney and a New Mexico attorney, because I'm in New Mexico. The business is in Arizona. So I needed people who are licensed in those states.
Aaron, what did you say to the attorney to try and get him to ride with you?
I just said, listen, I've got some basic financials on this business. I said, I'm part of a private equity group. Pretty much the same pitch that I gave to the business owners. I said, this private equity group is interested. They've joined with me. They're saying, these are the things I need to fulfill in order for them to go through with this. And remember, I had the contract already faxed over from the company that I'm trying to buy. So the basic contract, the structure was already there. And I said, I want you to review this and tell me what you think. Tell me if you'd be interested in something like this. Well, he saw the zeros and said, you know what, I'm willing to take this. Because some people will want you to do a letter of intent, which is cool. But other people, like this, will want a contract. There's differences of opinion as to the way to either one of them or one stronger than the other. The contract didn't bother me. I think that's not always a better way to go. But the contract did not bother me because of the way I could get out of it. I can't emphasize that enough. That's a big deal. Another thing, when I got with them and I actually signed the contract, what some of the things that I did to make it move along, because that's one thing. I don't know how your investors are set up and people you're talking to. They want action. They want now. Because they see deals all the time. So what I did was I said part of the contract was, because within 5 days of the signature of this contract, I went to the document. So you need a full due diligence list. You ever heard those Rick Ordet books?
I've read them.
You got them? Well, you remember that one, How to Buy and Sell a Business?
I don't have that one.
Well, it says it's got one list in the back that shows a whole due diligence checklist, and it's a good one. So you might want to just go to the bookstore, put that thing open, I'll buy it, because what I did was I sent a sheet. I was breaking down business information, operations, sales, personnel, intellectual property, business facilities, computer systems, financial and related data, and state and federal laws and regulations. I wanted all those disclosures. And, of course, you know, they'll come back and say, well, I'll give you this, but I won't give you this right now until we're farther along. But at least I had a big template of all the things that I needed them to give me, and then I could start my due diligence. And another thing, when I asked them for things, like Art said, I asked them for the aging of their payables. And of course, in this business, they don't owe anybody. It's all cash. It's incredible. They had to forge the money in the bank. Now, when I went to the investors, I made sure that one of the first things I talked to them about was working requirements. I went to get that out of the way. I said, you got all this money in the bank. Now, when I buy the business, it's leaving the bank account. So I need to find out, you know, I'll be looking at the due diligence, the paperwork and everything, but what kind of money do you need, worst case scenario, to have money for working capital, just day-to-day operations, inventories, things like that. I got that information. I built that into the cash that I needed, not only the purchase price of the business, but also working capital requirement. And then I also did this. I built in for the CPA and the lawyer. I shot high. So I figured, let me just say $200,000. It bumped it up another, in my case, I think it was like $500,000, $600,000.
How much did you work in for the CPA and the attorney?
I think I was just saying between $100,000 and $200,000.
Each or split?
Total,
that they would split for their fees in helping you do this.
Right. The thing was, this was based off anything they said. This was just based off my thought, well, you know, there's going to be ongoing conversation and the court needed it, this and that and the other, and I just didn't want to cap it, so I just said, I'm going to throw in $200,000 on top of the working capital requirement, on top of the money I need to buy the business, to get a nice lump of cash so that I don't need to go back to the investors and look stupid. Because it's all about credibility, and because of the fact that I didn't have the financial capability, I really had to talk like I knew what I was talking about. And I think it was really more the confidence when I went in. That's what I think really got me the information I needed.
I've learned through other things I've done, it's all about posture.
Oh, yeah.
You have to posture yourself in anything you do.
I'm 38. I look like I'm 26. So I look like a young kid. So that was working against me. And I have to project my agenda that much more. Look them in the eye and shake the hand very firmly. All those things, like you do on a job interview for the biggest job of your life. Career opportunity of your life, and I treated it like that. Now, it's funny because when I got with them, I felt like the credibility was high, because, of course, anybody that's selling something like this, they want to court their potential buyer anyway. They were whining and dining them. But I was trying to stay dispassionate about the business. It was not easy. I made and lost money in my life by mm-hmm. something like this. And it's just like when you go to buy a car and you want the car, you don't want the salesman to know it, because then you know you're emotionally attached to it. Then they have so much more leverage, and they can jerk you around that much more. I think I did a reasonably good job about that, and I'd like to think that I could have done a little bit better, because again, when you go from where we are, middle-class people, to multimillionaire, asset-wise, and a paycheck, $500,000 a year, or $1 million, or whatever, I mean, that's crazy money for us. It's life-changing. It's hard not to get excited about it. It's a struggle. Any other ideas you wanted to talk to me about?
Yeah, I'd like you to talk to me about when you went to raise the money.
One thing I would tell you is if you can get someone on board with you to write a business plan for you, get them on board. I mean, I know there are different websites.
Well, here's my situation. I'm talking the business broker into doing the majority of it because she did such a great job on doing the write-up of just the business. I'm working on it, but I'm trying to convince her to do the majority of it. Even if she doesn't know it, I'll make her do it.
Okay, now let me ask you this. If there's a venture capital place in town, see if you can go down to their office. Sometimes they have these business incubators, I think. If you can get with somebody where you can see business plans for business ventures such as this, it would do you a big favor, because then you know when you're not getting what you need. If there's something missing, you and I might, you know, we're not into mergers and acquisitions and all that stuff. I don't know, maybe you have been, but that's new to me. So it's like I'm looking at something thinking it looks great, and when I first share something with Artie, he's like, what is this crap? So template in your mind with the basic business plan templates that are out there, but what's so important is the aging of payables and receivables, your pro forma, your 3 years of financial information, as much as you can get.
I got it.
Those things right there. I mean, those are so important. Another thing, and that's a big deal, is non-compete. The longer, the better. And I know that it's pretty hard to get over 4 or 5 years non-compete in any industry. But try to get over 3 years. 4 or 5 is phenomenal, because the investors want to be out in 4 to 5 years. Usually they want to exit to do some wealth with their money. They can change their mind, but that's the exit that they usually have in mind. So you almost have to have some kind of like exit strategy for them of how you will take possession of the company or at least get them out of the company, even if you decide to keep with it. Think about that and lay that. that out with the business broker and whoever else you can deal with. People ask me about the business structure. When I signed a contract, I said structure to be determined, because I didn't want to tie myself to a type of structure that would not ultimately be the kind I wanted to own the business under. So if you get a CPA to ride along with you, it's going to be so much better because you can consult with them.
Did you buy stock or assets?
Asset sale.
My seller would like to do a stock sale.
Oh, they definitely would.
But my CPA said that it wasn't a big deal as far as his advantages.
What? The liability.
Well, yeah.
Like Art said, 10 minutes after you sign the contract or the closing, you slap with some kind of lawsuit down the road. And that's why I really was trying to go to the asset only. And I guess there are ways the CPA and them know how to get around that. You form a corporation in closing, down that corporation, take over the new corporation, stuff like that. But, I mean, again, it's like, you know, Art was big on asset sales.
So what's your view, in your opinion, the advantages or disadvantage of either or both?
Well, it's not basically you're just taking over any and all real liability. The ownership passed from one person to the other person, but it's almost like the individual is the same. It's like almost like the same individual.
So you don't want to do a stock sale?
That's the thing. It's not always bad to have a stock sale. It just depends on the situation. That's why a good lawyer and CPA are so important. The worst thing you can do is get to a person that you think they're good and they're a one-size-fits-all CPA or lawyer. You need an LLC. Well, what about these? No, you need an LLC. Or you need an S-corporation. Well, why? That's why Rich Dad Poor Dad, I love those books, because it talks about getting somebody, making sure that you talk to somebody and find out what your strategies are, what your desire for the business is, how your lifestyle is going to be, all those things, and then they can help you determine what the best form of ownership to take would be. Because most of the books say that you can switch from this entity to that entity at any point with very little problem in many cases. But that's not necessarily true. They always try to make it clean and easy. But undoing things that have been entrenched when you're a multi-million-dollar company, you can imagine it could be millions of dollars. Who knows? What it is, they say, start out right. Get your foundation set right. Your entities and everything set up from the beginning. And the thing is, for people like us, if we get the people to ride along with us and they're going to be paid out at the end, we can get the type of service that allows us to do that. Where normally people would try to cut corners and save some money and just get the business going, we could afford to say, okay, I want this done right. This is the way I want it done, according to the way you said. And I know it's going to cost me $25,000 by the time you're all done, but it's going to be set up right. Not, let's just put a Band-Aid on it, get it bought, and then deal with the mess afterwards.
Dale, do you have a CPA and attorney to ride along with you?
Yes and no. I have an attorney here in New York. Now, my CPA can handle it, but my attorney, I've got to find another one in Florida. I do have a friend who's a state senator down there that I'm talking to, and he's an attorney.
Can I speak with Bill?
Sure.
What you just said is huge. Now, I read this, and I don't know where, but it's so true. The attorney's best interest is the key. The attorney is involved in the business. They want their money, but they also don't want to look bad. They don't want to be seen as killing the deal, because see, the attorney is the one who takes the abuse. If the deal goes bad, who gets the shaft? The attorney. You've got a friend who's an attorney. Just keep that in mind, because the attorneys are the ones that kill the most deals. They're the deal killers. They're the ones who will, because they're afraid of the liability to them. Not necessarily your best interest, but the liability that they're going to get by decisions that are made. And it's true. I mean, I've seen it just in a little way already.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that because there's a friendship. You want to keep.
What are you saying in that sense?
Where you live can't be where you do other things. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like be careful mixing the two. Even though you could have the most high-powered attorney, a relative, whoever it is, that's phenomenal. But that link could be the link that undoes because there's another layer to the relationship.
So would you advise get an attorney who's not your friend?
As weird as it may seem, yep. If you have a friend that wants to do something to your house, put a room in your house, let them do it. But you know what? And it's a deal killer. And if you have a friend that kills a deal that you think would have taken care of you and made you a ton of money, you may have a hard time with that friend.
Yeah, I know you're right, because I've had a lot of real estate projects that I've done, and they were tough deals to do. And I've had attorneys that killed the deal. You've got to search out the right ones. There's no doubt about it.
You've got to manage them, because remember, they are the ones that are going to be able to brag when the deal goes through. And it builds their practice and their reputation. But the fact of the matter is, it becomes an ego thing where it's like, look, I want this, you know, I want this. It's like it can quickly become what they want and not what you want. The attorneys are notorious for that.
Let me just back up a little bit and talk about the money, okay?
Okay.
Tell me your situation when you started out. You had a business that you wanted to buy, and now you didn't have enough money. Bring me into your world about that, what you went through.
Okay, well, first of all, the first thing that I found was that no one necessarily wanted to say, okay, yes, here you can say, I'm working with so-and-so, and they have the money, they're backing me, let's do a deal. It was more like, this is what you have to say. You have to say, I'm part of a private equity group that raises millions of dollars for all cash acquisitions. Now, obviously, I'm the buyer, you're the seller. If you want to sell this business, I'll sign what you need to sign. Let me do the due diligence, and I'll let you know in a very quick manner, without wasting your time, whether or not we can do a deal. And I had to do that because of the fact that I had no money. You know, you can print cards up that say you're in business. I didn't even do that. I just walked in, and honestly, I was told that that might even be better, just to walk in as a private citizen that wants to buy a business. And again, if you've been in real estate, you know, it's almost like, don't be a broker. People get their broker's license to buy houses and stuff.
That's the stupidest thing to do.
It's the stupidest thing to do because you do this great deal. Everybody's all happy, right? And about 7 months later, you get a letter suing you because you used your knowledge to an unfair advantage.
Right.
And you're like, what? So it's the same thing. You want to be a schmuck in a way, not in a way where they think that it's not going to happen, but you don't want to be somebody that they think is going to get an unfair advantage over them and do all these things to them and convolute it. And so it was like I'm a private citizen that has the access to unlimited funds through this private equity group I'm involved in. And depending on the type of deal it is, then the private equity group, certain members are put together to make it happen. There are certain investors that invest in certain opportunities, in certain industries. So it may not necessarily be the same individual on every investment. And I just talked to them about that. And I said, listen, early in the due diligence period, we're going to know whether or not you have a deal. I'm not about to sit here and try to waste time. I might just need to happen to close within 3 months. Now, 3 months to a seller, that's pretty quick, especially these large businesses, because I know a couple businesses I was doing before. They had things like these stock purchases, and they were trying to do special filings and all these crazy things that were taking 9 months just to set up, venture capitalists and merger and acquisition companies. So when I came out and I said, listen, we want a cash deal, 3 months or less, let's just do this, let's see what we've got. That appealed to the person's desire to get the heck out of the business with the money. I didn't complicate it.
What about talking to your investors?
When I talked to Art, Art said, this is what I need. Now, I came to find out more and more that what he said up front wasn't necessarily everything that he needed, and I learned it by trial and error, but basically, it was these three things. Get the business plan done as soon as possible. They want to see something as soon as possible in writing. That's the number one thing. That's from the investor standpoint. Because once they have the business plan, then they'll be able to get everything. That's not a problem. Number two, though, and I'm only saying that number two is really number one for you, or maybe number two for you, is all the other stuff that we talked about. The business plan's one thing, but getting all the financials and knowing what to ask for that you have, because you have the business plan, but you also have attachment to the business plan. Like, see this attachment? Like when I was talking about the revenue,
mm-hmm.
the federal and state taxes, making sure that they're paying their taxes and they're paying employment tax and all that stuff. You gotta really get on that, all that stuff, quick. You know,
this business happens to be being audited right now by the IRS.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they're willing to give me the IRS agent's name and phone number.
Really? That's
yeah.
Not bad, because what I remember Art was talking about financials, audited financials, and all the different levels.
Right.
Of financials underneath that, and he said they're all basically crap.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's true. I mean, people can do whatever they want on QuickBooks Pro. I got all the QuickBooks Pro information you can imagine. But I needed the banking record. I needed them to say, I needed to say, listen, I want your banking record. I want your CPA to get me the information, not that you printed up or that they printed up on QuickBooks Pro. I need stuff from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stuff that really galvanizes whether or not this company really is doing what it says it's doing. Any of it. You needed stuff like the, all the company records you can get. I mean, when I was talking about intellectual property, find out about their what they own, their trade secrets, copyright, trademark, patent, domain name. You know, all the websites that they own, licensing agreements they have with other companies, the kind of policies they have as far as insurance, like the business umbrella liability. Do they have key man? Make sure you have your quote for your key man insurance. All these different insurances so that you're protecting the investors. If you go to investors and say, hey, look, I got key man insurance so that if something happened to me, the investors get $5 million. You know, really cheap insurance.
Mm-hmm.
But if the person that, because see, remember, you need a CEO. Most likely you'll have what's called a voting stock to a large degree. You may not own very much of the preferred stock, which is actually the cash flow. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you may end up at owning 100% or 50 or 60%. You know, make sure you own at least 51% of the voting stock so you make the decisions in the business. But as far as the preferred stock, where the money gets dispersed, you may only end up with 10 or 20% and have to buy them out and gain more equity. So let's say the business does $2 million. You know, if you make 20%, if you own 20% of the business, you're going to get $400,000, plus if you have a like a salary that you're taking, or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a ton of money, but you have the grow ability to get your equity to grow it by building up the revenue of the business or whatever other ways that you've got in mind. So you need to kind of get that cemented, you know. Just every agreement that you get from them, every doggone agreement, anything they sign, you need it in your hand. And matter of fact, you know what, Dale? I have the two-sheet due diligence thing.
Mm-hmm.
When we're done, give me your number. Oh, well, I was going to say when we're done, maybe you can give it. I don't know if you want to put it on the recording, but when we're done, maybe we can talk, and I can give you my number, and you can give me yours, and I can fax you.
Okay.
This list, so you don't have to go digging it out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a great list, man. I love it. But, competition, the competitors, you need to find out about those. The business broker may be able to help you with that. But also, you can go on Lexa, where if people visit this site, they also visit this site. There are certain websites you can go to, and you find out if this person, okay, this is the web address that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Who are their competition? The people who are hitting this website are also hitting these websites. That kind of information is very, very key, because those kind of things will help you set up your strategies for the future. Maybe you can attack a segment that hasn't been attacked yet, but the competitors are involved in. You know. Now this is more stuff for you. Make sure the way that they're taking their, if they get bonuses and they're doing salaries and dividends, all that kind of stuff, the CPA will help you way through that to find out what these people are really making. Remember when you read the thing that Art talked about add back? So you add back certain things to arrive at really what the company's really making.
Oh, yeah.
Make real sure and ferret out all that information and have the CPA really dig into what, because these companies sometimes will find a way to try to add back things that really aren't going to be added back. I mean, if they say consultants pay, add back. Well, doggone it, you want those consultants to continue with you. That's not add back. That's going to be continuing recurring expense to you.
Sure.
So if you're going to take over the company and you want to keep it as intact as possible, you don't want it to be a big old huge shakeup and everybody's leaving that was really running the show and you're sitting here trying to rebuild all these relationships or start relationships. You want people in place that have these relationships in place that report to you. You know, you want it to be as seamless as possible. So when Art says it's one or more, if there's two owners in a business and they both leave and there's no management, no key management in place, you're hosed.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, then you're starting over. And then he said the success rate is very low. If there's a management team in place, and if the business size that you're talking about, they must have a nice management team. Do they have a nice management team, general managers, things like that?
Generally, that's probably one of the problems of the business is that the owner is too hands-on. He does have key people in there,
right.
Okay, which can take over, but I'm looking to hire a couple key people, one of them being a controller, you know.
Beautiful. Okay, at least you got that under the control. You think about that. Plus, Art would be a resource about that because what he does is, you know, he interviews people and plugs them in. You know, they might get some kind of a stock option on it at some point. They might, who knows? But they can package it because businesses of the size that you and I are buying, you know, people make six figures running them.
Yeah.
And like Art says, they don't really bother from you and I. And that's what we want. We want somebody who looks at us and goes, you know, I don't need any help. I know everything to do. Now, of course, you know, there has to be some respect there, but you don't want to be in a situation where you have somebody who's calling you all the time.
Right.
You want a high-caliber person that can run it. And so if something happens, because remember what Art says, if something happens, you want that person, if they have to call, they call you. You call the investor.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, it's their money. They're going to protect it.
Sure.
So what we're doing, the way we and you are doing it, is smart, because we're really removing ourselves from the daily operation and the real worry of the thing. One thing that I decided I was going to do that hasn't, because I'm going to be running it for probably at least the first 3 to 6 months, pretty much being there in conjunction with the general manager that I'm hiring. But what I'm going to do is this. I checked out this something called Oracle, Oracle, the company.
Yeah.
Database management, you know, they have the system. They have a suite that you can get it online. You can get, there are different packages, and I probably get the more expensive ones, you know. You probably will too. But where it basically gives you a window on the operations of the business. Yeah, wherever you live, you can go into the computer and see what's going on real time in the different segments of your business. And pull them all together. It's incredible. Check into that. To the name of it right now. That's basic. But there's so many tools that we can use. I know Michael talks about them all the time. That we can use to make it to where we can manage it without actually having to be there. And we can know that we're not getting ripped off. You know what I mean? So that was kind of cool. I've been doing research on that.
The only thing is, I guess, where, you know, I have a little concern is when I present this to the investors.
Yeah.
You know, that's always, you know, the money is always a concern. But when I present it to the investors, you know, what am I to expect, you know, and how hard was it for you to, you know, once you get the business plan and everything, all the ducks in order, how hard was it for you to really raise the money?
Well, let me tell you, I'm going to share this with you, and this is not public, but what I'll tell you is this, I'll tell you this, Dale. Thanks, Michael, for doing this, and I'll share this with Dale. What happened was, we got to the, we were right down to the nitty-gritty, mm-hmm. and the people waffled. They messed up. So we're going at it from a different angle. It's unfortunate, but we're actually having to take some action. Okay? So what ended up happening was, from the investor standpoint, that they're going to make money regardless. Because, see, I have a contract that's airtight. And I have all this proof that they did not do what they were supposed to do, that they didn't release the documents that I needed and things like that. So I did everything right and just ran into a brick wall. Well, the company tried to resell themselves to somebody else.
Ooh.
For a much higher price. And then they did it to them. And now they're trying to the word on the street is they're trying to sell for 3 times what my contract price was.
Oh my God.
So can you imagine? See, so basically I should be fine. I'm gonna make money regardless. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If I take over the business with my background, I'm gonna make a ton of money. You know, I'm gonna put some things in and it's gonna really explode. If I decide to flip it to the other investor that's just dying for it and just take and keep the spread, I'll do that. Or if I just decide, hey, just pay me money, you know, I'm doing it for this. So I mean I have about 3 different ways I can make money on this deal. So I'm not worried either way. But basically everything I'm telling you, I did correct. But they reneged because they want more money. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I've got 2 attorneys, I've got all the CPA, so obviously I'm in good shape. It's just I'm just telling you what can happen. Sometimes when you go through this process, you reacquaint people with their own business, mm-hmm. and start saying, wait a second, why did I sell it for this price? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Why did I sell it for this price? The only problem is they signed a contract with me.
Seller's remorse.
Right.
Eric, do you think you are reacquainted and let that owner know more of the value he really had? Did you give away too much? Do you think that had anything to do with it?
No, but you know what I think it was? Honestly, Michael, that's a great question. What it was the owner, he enjoys building businesses, starting them. He doesn't necessarily enjoy running them, okay? So he has a system in place. But I think what I did in the purchase of this business and the way I went about it, I did it in a very high level, you know, the way that Art did says to do it. I think the prior owner was probably a lot less sophisticated in the way he went about it. The way I did it, step by step, from Art's perspective, it really raised the awareness of the owner. The owner is brilliant. The guy that started the business is brilliant at starting businesses. He has a certain type of genius. He's just not a total businessman. Well, I raised his awareness of things in a way, I guess. You know what I mean? Through this process. And he just kind of opened his eyes as to what he had and the potential that he had. And it was nothing. There was nothing I really could do not to, because the things I asked for and the processes that I went about caused him, I guess, to think about things. But it is interesting. You're going to find people who lack integrity no matter how much money they make, right? I mean, we've seen that with Enron and all of them, right? So
I just...
Middle-class me learned the hard way about that. I'm getting some training in character development for people here, helping them out with their character at my expense. But, hey, the good thing was that I'm not really paying the price, because my partners, the people that are partnering with me, they're absorbing it, knowing that they're going to get a payout.
Dale, what's your plan? You're going to be going down tomorrow, right?
Right.
What is your gang plan so far?
Well, this is probably, you know, I didn't know what I was getting my going to run into, but it sounds like this is my interview for the job. And, you know, then I've already gotten the financials on it, you know, the income tax statements.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, what I'd like to see is that checklist. And my objective is, I don't know if you've ever read the book Socratic Selling, but it's you know, Socrates was a great questioner, and that's what that's about. And so my position, I believe, is to ask questions.
Well, I've revamped the entire course, and actually, Dale, you don't even have this, because I'm just now getting a lot of the materials back from my CD duplicator. And Dale, I don't mind sending you this, but I have about 30 different CDs now, so I have all the MP3 files on CD-ROMs where you can put them in the CD player, but I've added a whole section to the Hamel course. Now, Hamel's great at buying businesses, already profitable businesses, by looking at the value of them, but one thing he is not, and he's not a marketer, okay? At least I don't believe he is. But another, and it's a whole different aspect. Once you buy a business that's making good money and you can get the investors to buy it, then if you bring in the marketing and look for the hidden marketing assets within the business, that's like dynamite, putting those two together. So I've got a lot of my material that comes from my HMA system, which is the hidden marketing asset system, and there's a questionnaire I'll send to you, Dale. I don't know if you've ever seen it or heard one of the recordings where I've done one of those. Have you? It's where you. It's a series of questions, and it's been proven, and I've got it all mapped out for you in a PDF file. And it's a series of questions that you may want to go down there with after you do your initial investigation, maybe at another time. And it's for you to identify the hidden assets within the business, not necessarily the financials and stuff, but intangible hidden assets within the business, to really give yourself kind of like an X-ray view of even where they're leaving more money on the table, or if you end up owning this thing, how you could really grow the business without any additional forms of advertising. I'll email you a sample. It's a one-hour recording of me taking someone through this process, an accountant actually out of Australia, and you'll see all the stuff we uncover in his business that's just waiting there for him that he didn't know he had. And then in that recording, there'll be a PDF file you can download. It's called the Opportunity Analysis. And my HMA consultants use this to, when they question a business, to identify where the assets are in the business before they do consulting for them, because a consultant wants to go into a business that's got hidden assets, you know, where he can uncover them and negotiate a piece of the action on the growth of the business. So that may be nice. And when you talk about Socrates, and I mean, it's all questions.
And I have to tell you, I think I'm just that type of person, and I was doing that to a degree anyway, because I've been a salesman my whole life. So I was just asking a lot of questions. And what was interesting is that's another reason why I think they're doing so smoothly, because they like me because I was interested in them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we talked about, and we talked, and a lot of it was saying we were sharing things, and what we had read, books we had read, things like that. We had a lot in common. And he's the majority owner. The minority owner was the one that caused all the problem, and I think got to him. And got him because the minority owner was trying to get more, a bigger percentage of the business, and was negotiating that while they're trying to sell the business. I'm like, that's why he didn't want me to buy the business. He said, well, I'm trying to get another few percent of the business. Can he just walk away? I'm like, I have a contract with you, man. Why didn't you pay that up before? So that was part of the reason why the business kept getting blocked. But they had a contract. But I did talk to him at length, and we hit it off. We kind of aligned with each other the way we thought about some things, and he liked that because, you know, he liked talking about himself.
Yeah, so when you go down there, Dale, you know that's going to be number one. Talk to him. This is this guy's baby, his passion. He's probably lived with it for many years, and just ask him lots of questions about how he got started. Let him just keep talking. I mean, I know when I do my interviews, it's really the key. You're building such rapport by just being a good listener. And he'll tell you things that you won't even have to think of questions. If you just listen and keep probing and let him talk and make him feel comfortable and you know, be really interested, he'll tell you everything you want to know.
Sure.
And you also want to find out, you know, his real motivations, why he wants to sell. You know, what's the real reason? And then another thing to think about, if you, for whatever reason, can't come up with the money and you find his real motivations, his real reasons for selling, you may be able to negotiate something else. There's no rules. You may be able to negotiate an idea. What do we teach the consultants is you can go in and, you know, depending on the hidden assets that he has and how much potential for growth, and Eric and I have talked about this, you may be able to negotiate ownership of the business by growing the business. So you could say to him, if I can grow the business this much, and in that growth we pull that money out, money that you would have never had, and we put that towards a purchase price, would you then turn ownership over to me?
Yeah. Great.
So you just got to, you know, find out what his real reasons, you know, for selling are, what his situation is. Everyone has a situation. He may be sick. You know, did I ask you what, do you know what the deal is? The real reason?
He says he wants to get out from underneath the day-to-day management. And, you know, I said to the broker, and I asked the same question, and she says he wants the money. Now, that tells me there's something else that I don't know, because he wants the money. Why does he want the money?
Call Dun & Bradstreet. Get on their website. I talk to Dun & Bradstreet, okay? And they charge you for reports on there, like the credit and stuff like that. But a young lady there was really nice, and, you know, we hit it off, but yes, we talked for a few minutes. And she said, Eric, I don't want to charge you for this. She goes, what I'm finding, this company, they're so strong financially, they don't owe anybody anything. Their credit is excellent. Don't buy the report. I'll tell you right now, they're in great shape. So I didn't have to pay to find out if this company was shaky. Well, that put you in maybe on a good plane with them, but also they'll know they can't jack you around. So if you know about them, the more you know about them, the less they can jack you around.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be like, this guy knows stuff. That's why when I was talking about the aging of receivables and payables like Art talked about, that's powerful, because how many people that buy businesses even know about that stuff? Oh, yeah, this is my business. It makes sales $1 million a year, you know, $16 million a year in sales. And, you know, it makes $4 million. But do they not pay their bills? Are they counting sales for stuff that they just pushed on customers and told them that they have 3 years to pay for it and book the sales? You know, aging is really important.
One thing going for this business is it's a cash business, you know, cash accrual. Well, they do have receivables. And what it is collecting from insurance companies.
Oh.
You know, the way it works.
Do they use factoring and stuff like that?
Pardon?
Do they use factors or anything like that to release the cash faster?
No. No, they don't use factoring. They do have, you know, it's $6 million in sales. It makes about $1.5 million net.
Okay.
And they have $700,000 in accounts receivable, which come with the business. All the accounts payable are going to be paid.
Aha, I heard that. You know what? Don't let them do that if you can. If you can do it, remember, like Art said, if they want to leave the receivables, that's fine. That's fine. Leave the receivables. You know what? I want the payable. Because remember what Art said, there's more money in payable sometimes than in receivable.
Oh, yeah.
And before that owner walks away, you try to get that doggone owner to call his people and say, you know, because, you know, a lot of owners, they've got these terms and they don't use them. A lot of people, even on the businesses I've done in the past, a lot of, you know, or worked with, you know, for my clients, they'll have like 90-day terms with somebody. And as soon as the bill comes, they pay it. And then they have to wait 60 days for their customers to pay them.
So, Eric, are you suggesting take the receivables off of the purchase price and let him deal with them?
Now, he might say, like Art said, and of course he said, what you might find, though, is that the guy doesn't have faith in those receivables. He'll go, well, you know what, whatever you can get into split with me or whatever.
He did say he'd guarantee the receivables.
Okay, now remember to watch out for this, because like Art says, the guy may be substantially wealthy when you buy the business from him for whatever the purchase price is, but he may not be able to indemnify that.
Yeah,
or he might just take off and, you know, you're stuck.
Yeah, but the way he's willing to hold $2 million of the purchase price.
Yeah, but again, but while that's strong, remember, he's trying to get a stock purchase price. He's trying to sell you stock.
Right.
Who knows what lien is going to be slapped against him? Who knows?
You're right.
You know what I'm trying to say? I mean, it's like, there are a few layers to this that concern me. There's a few red flags going up in my mind from what I've learned. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say, if he wants you to take the receivable, then I would say, listen, I'm going to make your life easier. I'll take the payable. Because, and the thing is, he, like I said, he may be paying cash on a barrelhead. You may be able to get him to say, listen, I'm buying the company. We're going to go forward with this. I want you to negotiate the most aggressive credit terms possible with your suppliers. Have him do it before he leaves. Leave you that legacy so that when you get products, you don't have to pay for them for maybe an extended period of time. So you can work the supplier money. Right?
I don't think that's a big deal, because in $6 million sales, the inventory is only $55,000.
True. Okay, but so I wonder what his receivables are, or how much he's owed, though. I mean, when he gets...
$700,000.
Okay, think about $700,000. Now, a standard like amount, like for instance, he's usually around that range, and he has receivables of that on every 30 days or 60 days. I mean, I don't know how it is. How often is it?
Well, it's a constant. I think. I got to check on that.
Yeah, find out about that. Remember the thing about exceptional year? Find out if he's had a spike in sales this year, and he only had how long has the business been around?
98.
More than 5 years.
Yeah. It's hit a 37% growth for the last 3 years each year.
Rampant. So it's not, you're not going to see some crazy spike where they did something one time to somebody and it's never going to happen again, and the business is being sold based off the value of that client or whatever.
Right. No, it's been growing up, and there's no large clients. Okay,
yeah.
They're all about the same size.
But nobody's getting more than a quarter of their business or anything like that.
No.
Okay. But yet, I'm gonna say this, Bill. I'm gonna just say it because I mean we're like a brotherhood here. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're guys. We're trying to get this thing done. I'm gonna harp on you on this. I'm gonna say it one more time. Check into what his credit is like with his suppliers. He may not be using it. You remember, home builders. Remember this came out. Home builders borrow money, short term, like 15-18%. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
When you build homes, if you work your payables right, and you don't owe money for months, and you've got hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank, you can make hundreds of thousands of dollars
off of that money.
Off of that money. Well, you make it, that would normally just be sitting in your bank account at 2% interest, 1%. That's why you keep harping on those payables. You can really turn that and do some other things. You can use those payables and do some things that maybe leverage on buying other businesses and doing other things. But that's a great deal. When you have that kind of money, there's a great deal of stuff you can do with it. Keep that in mind, because payables is big. Art talks about it, and he touches on it, and I've read other things and got into it more, and that's a huge deal.
I think the biggest, see, there's manufacturer's reps.
Uh-huh.
Involved in this.
Uh-huh.
And I think the greatest part of the expense is their commissions.
Huh.
I don't know how to change that.
You need to explain the structure of that, though. Because remember, like, the hidden asset, remember? Like,
mm-hmm.
like what has been talking about?
Yeah.
That's a hidden asset right there. See, people like to get paid. And remember, if this business gets sold, does that mean the arrangement with the rep is going to stay the same, or that you're not going to go and do business with somebody else? How do they know that you don't have somebody else lined up? You need to use that. It's like I was reading about a guy that wanted to buy a liquor distributor, a large liquor store, and he went to the distributor for the store he wanted to buy, and it's like the soda business. The distributors do not talk, they do not share information with each other. It's like a war. It's like Pepsi and Coke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of industries are like that. They don't the company, the veterans don't share information together. They don't really know the in-depth what each other's doing. And so you play them against each other. So it's like you go and you say, hey, you know, I really want to do this. Make sure you know who the reps are that are involved and find out about other reps that, do the same thing. And link the time of business and things like that. So you can have an ace in the hole. You can say, look, I'd like to continue to do business with you, but this is the way that I'm used to doing this or that. And this is the thing that this company is willing to give me. You need to be able to kind of be in the same plan field. And now, do they want to cut their nose off to spite their face? I don't think so. You know, it's not like, you know, it's like borrowing a broker commission. Well, you know, but, you know, you want to pay people what they do, you know. But the fact of the matter is, if a business gets sold, that's great, then the broker makes a commission. If the business doesn't get sold, the broker doesn't get jack.
Right.
So it's like, it's in the broker's best interest to sell the business to make the money, whether it gets paid out at one lump sum, or just paid out over a year's time, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're still getting money they wouldn't have gotten. So it's like, all those relationships that he has them. But that doesn't mean that they're the best ones. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He might just be doing this. Just look at from your real estate that you do and not mine. I come across opportunities, and the person has a big building, a big apartment building, mm-hmm. and they haven't been raising their rent for 15 years because they are friends with half the people. Now, does that mean, that do they have a profitable business? Yeah, they're making money. Are they doing it right? No. Are they caught up in a friendship thing? Yes. Are you? No. You don't know those people. You don't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You're going in clean. You're a big-time investor. You got money, and you're here to make money, and you're here to have the best relationship. And it may not be them if they're not willing to work with you and show good faith. So all those things are going to add real value to that company for you and real money in your pocket. And the reason I'm saying that is because you just have this, what I'm telling you, this will give you the mental leverage and the mental confidence to be able to go in there and talk shop with people and let them know that you're not some, you know, somebody to be played with.
Sure.
You know, without being adversarial, you're just bringing things up and you're asking questions like that and making the person think, wow, this is a substantial person. This business will close. I mean, it's interesting. It's just really psychological.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it. I mean, it's been such a big education. You know, I learned so much. I never knew anything about business. I thought I knew business. I know Jack. I mean, I knew how to be a good employee, but this is a shift for us. In the man of being the owner, you know, and that's a whole other skill set there,
mm-hmm.
you know, that most people just do not have. College or no, I didn't go to college. I graduated as a junior from high school.
And guys, I'd love to, if we could continue and do, and just, and play this out, because Dale, if you go down there and it looks really promising and things look like it works out, and we could take this and do an audio case study all the way to the your ownership, man, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I'd love to, yeah.
We'll both learn stuff. I'm
yeah. Okay, guys. Well, this has been wonderful. Okay. Talk to you guys later.
All right.
Bye. That's the end of this recording with Eric and Dale, and I hope this has given you a new perspective on Art System. If you need anything at all, please don't hesitate to call 858-274-7851 or email me at michael@hardtofindseminars.com. There's an interview in the section of the audio recordings at Hard to Find Seminars. It's with a business buying expert. His name is Art Hamill. If you go back to my site, hardtofindseminars.com, and go to the product section, along the left side in light blue, you will see a list of topics. Look for the one that says business buying. Click on that link and you'll be taken to about 7 hours of exclusive interviews with Arthur Hamill. Arthur Hamill has purchased multi-million dollar businesses, over 200 of them in his lifetime, and he will tell you how to do the same thing. It's some fascinating content, and I wanted you to know about it.